This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. The holiday weekend is over. The new fiscal year has begun, and Massachusetts still doesn't have a budget. So the state is operating on a provisional one as lawmakers debate how to close a potential deficit of nearly $1 billion over the next year, that figure according to the Mass Taxpayers Foundation. But also underway behind closed doors, the debate over how to tax legally sold marijuana under the state's new law. The House and Senate have two sharply different bills. And one more biggie, a health care proposal from Governor Charlie Baker. It would overhaul the state's Medicaid program known as MassHealth. Joining us from Beacon Hill now is Steve Brown, WBUR State House reporter. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Jill. How are you today?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us. Let's start with the budget and what's happening today. So a possible $1 billion deficit at this point. We assume there are cuts coming. What do you hear about those cuts?
We don't know about any cuts right now because the conference committee is just, they're meeting behind closed doors, as you say. So they're not telling us what specifically they're looking at or anything like that.
Sure. So, are there main sticking points, though, that you can talk about that we know about that were taking place before we went into the holiday?
Well, the big question is, how much money are we going to have next year? That's the thing. They built these budgets based on an assumption that spending would grow 3.9% in tax revenues. However, looking back over this past fiscal year, that's been about 1.4%. So there are a lot less. There's a lot less money to work with. So therefore, they are going to have to go in and once they figure out exactly how much money the state has, how much they're going to have to trim from each line item.
So the big question is still where, and nobody really has much detail on that. That we imagine that we know healthcare will be coming into the mix here. Knowing what we do know about 2016 and that those revenues were not as high as projected, do you hear anything about revisions for revenues being projected downwards for this fiscal year that we're in? So is there a shift on that yet?
Well, yeah, that's the thing that they're waiting to find out. They've been kind of holding off. Nobody's coming right out and saying the conference committee's not getting a bill out right now. But informally, what I'm hearing is they're waiting to hear what the June figures say. How was the tax revenues in June? And then once they get those numbers, those will be hard numbers. They won't be projections. They won't be speculating what those figures are. They'll know what those figures are, and then they'll actually have numbers to work with.
Okay. So Massachusetts was one of several states that went into its new calendar or new fiscal years, rather, July 1st without budgets. But this state, Massachusetts, had a little forethought. There is a provisional budget in place, a $5.15 billion budget that I believe lasts a month. Correct me if I'm wrong. And is that going to be, in your assessment at this point, a long enough time for lawmakers to figure out what they're doing?
That gives them a lot of breathing room right now. Gives them a month to figure out. And again, as I mentioned, get those real figures for the month of June in, and then they can digest them. Probably over the next few days, I'm hearing that a budget may be coming out because they will have those numbers. They do have until the end of July, theoretically, because it is a 1/12 budget, covers 1/12 of the year, which would get us to July 31st. I don't think they're going to wait that long. They pride themselves on trying to get as close to that July 1st deadline as possible. Sometimes they go a little bit later. Sometimes they get it done a little bit earlier, depending on how complex the year is.
This is not a historic moment in time where the budget is late. It's happened before. But let's talk about that. The biggest chunk of the state budget overall is MassHealth, the Medicaid program in the state, and that does account for 40% of the budget. The lawmakers asked the Baker administration to make changes to MassHealth instead of them doing it themselves, and he sent a plan to the legislature that would help limit the growing cost of MassHealth, and that version, the official version, came in just last week, as I understand it. Could you talk a little bit about that plan? I have some details. I can throw them out, but what's the reaction
Sure.
been, and if you could talk about it somewhat.
Well, the reaction to the plan, this is a plan that the governor has put forth that is really being considered by this conference committee that's looking at the budget. And so right now, what I'm hearing is that they would like a more of a bill, not just a part of the budget kind of thrown in at the last minute. They would like a complete bill looking at, how are we going to fix mass health? How are we going to deal with that growing Medicaid payment that we have to make every year? And put forth a bill and have it considered, have hearings, have it debated fully in both the House and the Senate, and then make their decision based on that.
So what we know so far, and there's not a lot of information yet, is that some Massachusetts residents who are in low-income brackets who are now on mass health would no longer have mass health as an option. They would move to commercial insurance plans and the state health connector instead. This is complicated stuff with dollars
and
cents attached.
Where's Martha Beavinger when we need her?
Right. Well, the question is, there's already been vocal opposition to this, and we can get more into that on another time. But possible tax increases because of the cost of mass health, and of course, what might be coming up from Washington in terms of Medicaid dollars. Have you heard anything about possible tax increases at this point?
The legislature tries to avoid tax increases at all costs. They'd rather touch the third rail than touch a tax increase. But as so much uncertainty out of Washington and what have you, and anything is possible down the line. Of course, this proposal that the governor has put forth would assess businesses. So I guess you could argue that that's a form of a tax increase right there.
Mm-hmm. And there will be public testimony on what's been proposed. It wouldn't take effect until 2019, but there's a lot to understand still. Finally, Steve, I just want to ask you about the marijuana law in place already in the state of Massachusetts, and lawmakers are trying to come to some consensus over how, among other things, the legally sold marijuana is going to be taxed. They blew through their deadline on Friday, which was a self-imposed deadline to have something ready. Do you know why that happened? Do you know what happened?
They just were still too far apart on taxes and local option. That's what we're hearing. Again, the conferees, we ask them every time they go into a meeting, what can you tell us? What do you know? And they just, today, Senator Jalen, who's the Senate chair of the marijuana conference, didn't say a word. She just kind of held up her hand, like, just with a smile, like, I can't tell you. I'm not going to say anything.
So the House plan is pretty different from the Senate plan. Can you lay that out?
The House plan basically takes the marijuana law that was passed by voters last November and throws it out, starts from scratch on a lot of things, and some of the things are similar. But for the most part, it's a whole new rewrite, whereas the Senate is just going in, keeping the law that was passed by voters last November intact and making changes, some changes, and withholding changes, particularly with taxation. The House was in at 28%. They wanted to raise it up from the 12%, which is what the law is right now. Senate wants to keep it at the 12%.
Steve, there's some real sticking point here for voters. There is the issue of the will of the voters here. Lawmakers are in the position of being allowed to change a law that 53% of voters approved. That means change the elements of it. And there wasn't a whole lot of, there's not, like with casinos, there's not a lot of structure around the law yet. But how much are Senate and House lawmakers considering what voters want in this debate over the final bill?
Actually, there is a lot of structure around the law. The law is already written. It's all put together last November. The voters approved it. So there is a structure there. And that's, again, where both the House and Senate are a little bit in disagreement. Both sides publicly say we want to respect the will of the voters. However, the House version goes a little bit further in making changes. So some argue, and particularly the supporters of Question 4 last year, say the House is not respecting the will of the voters, mm-hmm. although the House will disagree. Senate, again, they're saying they want to respect the will of the voters. They've made some minor changes. So that's where that's playing out.
Okay. Steve Brown, I give you permission to break into the show if anything happens in the next hour, okay?
If anything does, and I don't think it's going to.
I don't think so either. Thank you so much for joining us. That's WBUR State House reporter Steve Brown. As coastlines recede in Massachusetts, so-called heat islands are growing. Those are dense urban areas where cement and asphalt cover most of the ground between brick buildings and raise the temperature some days by 20 degrees or more. Throughout the summer, WBUR is presenting a series of stories called Massachusetts Climate, A Season of Change. And today, WBUR's Martha Biebinger reports on the health risks posed by heat islands.
It's 75 degrees outside on a reasonably cool summer morning in Chelsea. But inside a third-floor apartment, it's a humid 80 degrees with the windows wide open. And Fausto Alvarado finds it difficult to breathe. I can't get enough oxygen and get tired, says Alvarado, who was born in Honduras. He says it sometimes feels like he's drowning. Alvarado rests his arm on a pillow while his daughter pulls a syringe of antibiotics from a plastic wrapper and plunges the fluid into an IV. Alvarado is just back from the hospital. This 88-year-old has emphysema and is concerned to learn that he lives inside a heat island.
Correcto que sí.
Alvarado's daughter says more and more people will get sick over time. That's the prediction of doctors who study climate change. More dehydration and kidney failure, more difficulty with emphysema, asthma, and other lung conditions, more heart problems and heat stroke. Some research shows older Americans are adapting to the heat, learning to stay indoors near air conditioners. But Chelsea Deputy Fire Chief John Quateri isn't seeing it.
Usually in the summer months, we see a spike in medical calls, whether it's dehydration or people just passing out.
But Quateri didn't realize that parts of his hometown are hotter than others. Most of Chelsea is a heat island, meaning temperatures are consistently hotter than average. I show Quateri a heat map. Patches of red, which include the fire station where Quateri stands, registered a high of 140 degrees earlier this week.
This area that's marked in red, this is where we would see the spike in calls during the summer.
As it happened, just this past weekend.
We were very busy, and most of the calls were in this Broadway area right here.
Satellite data shows temperatures in the hottest parts of Chelsea, Everett, Somerville, and Boston are 10, 20, sometimes 40 degrees higher than in tree-lined, spacious suburbs. Chelsea has launched a study to determine the extent and magnitude of heat island effects. Alex Train is a senior city planner.
Chelsea's the second most densely settled area in the Commonwealth.
Second after Somerville. In Chelsea, most residents are low to moderate income. 72% of them rent. The housing stock is older. Train looks down Broadway toward Fausto Alvarado's apartment. There's a line of 80 to 90-year-old buildings made of brick and stone.
Those materials retain heat. So, for example, you'll have a 90-degree day here in Chelsea, and while, you know, that evening it may drop down to the 50s or 60s, those buildings are still retaining the heat it collected during the afternoon.
During heat waves, Chelsea opens schools, the senior center, and city hall, buildings that have central air. And the city is planting trees, more than 2,000 in the past 4 years. But there are setbacks. Roughly 30% of those trees have died.
Part of that is from gas leaks that are underground that are killing off the trees. So as you're methane gas leaks. And that's a cost to the city and its time and effort.
Roseanne Bongiovanni runs Green Roots Chelsea, a nonprofit that has helped the city build two playgrounds and gardens so far. This one, atop a former dump, is on the edge of a creek.
You feel a lot less of that heat and that gray. You can hear the birds chirping. You feel the wind and lots of opportunities to recreate, to be calm, to be in some shaded areas. And so we're trying to replicate that throughout the entire city.
But in Chelsea, like many cities, the heat menace emerges in surprising places.
We're standing outside a school and there's a playground.
Dr. Aaron Bernstein, a pediatrician at Boston Children's Hospital, meets me in the same Broadway heat island to talk about kids and heat. His eye goes to the ground beneath slides and a jungle gym.
These days, the good news is that we don't have asphalt on the ground, but we've replaced that with rubberized surfaces. In this case, it's pitch black, which will expose those kids to more heat than they would have if they were even standing potentially on this concrete, which is a lighter color.
How much more heat on this partly sunny, mid-70-degree day? I pull out a handheld temperature gun and point at the concrete.
That's 82.
It's not then we walk to the edge of the black playground rubber.
96, yeah.
Bernstein worries how kids with asthma would fare on this overheated playground. All the kids who live within heat islands may be at risk for more stress at home. Research shows heat interferes with sleep, aggression, and some mental health problems. Bernstein, who's the program director for climate, energy, and health at Harvard's Chan School of Public Health, says in the short term, the solution is more air conditioning. But there's an AC battle in Chelsea this summer. Here's the deal. The city's housing authority is telling residents to remove the AC in any room with just one window, often a bedroom, because it blocks an escape route. Residents are flooding their doctors with requests for letters, hoping to prove their bedroom ACs are medical necessities. Dr. Lisa Carr is at the Mass General Health Center in Chelsea.
The clinic has been barraged with a whole bunch of people requesting this very same letter.
Carr says there are no guidelines about air conditioners for medical use. So these health center doctors created a policy. For children, they're writing letters for those who use a daily asthma medication. But for adults, doctors are left to decide. Would the patient have fewer migraines or less depression? Would that rash go away with air conditioning?
But it's really tough to try to sort these things out. I'm sure there's lots of people that would benefit from having air conditioning in the really hot summers here.
Summers that are only expected to get hotter, dangerously so, inside the heat islands scattered through urban Boston. But more use of air conditioners will compound the problem of rising energy use and climate change.
That's WBUR's Martha Biebinger. And you can see a map of heat islands around Greater Boston on our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston.